Now, one of the biggest things that we have facing us today in this culture is a little phrase called social justice, critical theory, cultural Marxism. Now, the reason why this is important, because this, and of course, there's nothing new under the sun in the book of Ecclesiastes. This is just another repackaging of an old lie. And it's a form in Colossians chapter 2 of just basic Gnosticism. What's Gnosticism? Gnosticism is one of those things like when you have a club, when you're like, if you can think of this, kids, when you have a club and you have like, you know, five guys in it, and this is our club and nobody else can get in. Nobody else knows the secret handshake, and nobody else knows the secret language code. That's all it is. It's one of those kind of thinkings that you got to be in our club. But the way it works, and it works with communism or anything else all the way down, there's only two groups of people in the world. There's the people who have the power and oppress, and there's the people who are being oppressed. That's it. See, in the Bible, though, that's not the definitional categories. The definitional categories are wheat and tares, saint and sinner, sons and slaves, saved and lost. Which dictionary are we going to hold to? Now, you're going to make a choice. This is what it's going to come down to. In other words, there's a difference between these two sentences, and see if you can find it. I am a black Christian versus I am a Christian who is black. What's the difference? In the first sentence, I am a black Christian, or a white Christian, or Hispanic Christian, doesn't matter what you put in there. The emphasis is on my ethnicity or my race. And I start my definitional point with that. Instead of, I'm a Christian who's black. I'm a Christian who's male. I'm a Christian who's Jewish. See the difference? If I don't start with the basic DNA of being a Christian as my identifying marker, then I'm going to listen to the world and make something else be that marker. And when you start with something else, trust me, that thing is going to take over everything like a cancer. And you're going to see everything in terms of black and white, or rich and poor, or Jew and Gentile like it was back then. You had Paul in Antioch in Galatians chapter 2, and he's writing to the Galatians. And here's Peter. Here's an apostle. He's over there in Antioch with them. And he realizes this gospel of grace. I mean, he's torn down the dividing wall, it says in Ephesians chapter 2. There's no more Jew and Gentile in the church. Paul being raised as a good Jew, I mean, he's having to learn this stuff, right? He learns it with Cornelius, with the big sheet coming down with all the unclean animals, and God says for him to eat. So he's on a learning curve with this stuff. Well, here he is in Antioch. He's fellowshiping with the Gentiles. He's eating at the table with them. And the cool kids come down from Jerusalem. The Jews, the Judaizers, the heavyweights who have that Jewish background. And Peter feels compelled to all of a sudden make distinctions between Jews and Gentiles. He picks up his plate and he moves it from one table to the next. And Paul calls him out on it. Says, you can't do that. You were eating with the Hispanics over here who are Christians. And you moved and said, well, this table over here is a little bit more spiritual than that group over there. And you know what Paul called that? You're not being true to the gospel. He didn't say you weren't being true to convictions or your liberties. The gospel. So this is a gospel issue. In other words, when he says there's no Jew or Gentile in Christ, no male or female, white, black, rich, poor, whatever else, whatever distinctions might be out there that are man-made, he means it. And in a church, there's only brothers and sisters. That's it. And woe to the man who tries to make a distinction and make that the first part of the DNA, as we would say, when it comes to our Christianity. So in the world's idea, there's the oppressed and the oppressors. You have to understand that. They'll use language along those lines. You have to understand that. You can get caught up into that if you're not careful. When you look at the world and you say, I don't understand why they're tearing down monuments over here of Robert E. Lee and, you know, Stonewall Jackson. And they're making a big deal about that. Well, eventually they start tearing down monuments of Jonathan Edwards and George Whitefield. Well, these guys own slaves. So you have to have an answer for that. You have to know your dictionary. God doesn't condemn the owning of slaves. Imagine that. See how you fight against the culture? It almost sounds blasphemous to say something like that. We're not saying go out and buy them. We're just saying God doesn't condemn them. Slave trading, yeah. Slave owning, no. Read the letter to Philemon from Paul. He didn't tell him he's committing the unpardonable sin because Onesimus is with Paul and he's sending him back. You're going to find people on Judgment Day who were masters of slaves hearing, well done, thy good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master. You're going to find slaves on Judgment Day who are going to hear from their Lord of Lords, well done, thy good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master. How do you reconcile that in this culture? How do you have a testimony with the gospel? You better know what the gospel is. That whether it's a culture or it's a person, that whole idea of equality is only found in the gospel. You try and put equality from the world's standard, because see, think about it. What the whole mentality of the social justice understanding is to try and equalize everybody down to the lowest common denominator. It can't be done. It won't be done. God won't do that. This isn't because one group is better than another group. Look at it this way. We're all lepers in the leper colony. No person is better than another person. I'm not better than you. But you know something? I can be better off than you because of my culture. Because of the blessings of God. There was a missionary, Clark was his name at the beginning of the century. He went to the Nagaland in northern India trying to evangelize the natives up in that area. And there was a testimony. I'm going to see if I can read it to you because I think it's pretty outstanding. The guy says, when I went to war, I marked my enemies like a sniper. And when I got to them, I chopped their heads off with a knife. He says, these are the translated words of Wang Chu, one of the few surviving members of the Naga headhunting tribe in northern India. Documented in 2015 by National Geographic. Not even a Christian story here. He says, if I happened upon the enemy, it didn't matter if the person was a man, woman, or a child. I chopped the head off. He says, in the 19th century, Edwin Clark, an American missionary, became the first to take the gospel into the territory called Nagaland. Through persistent evangelism, schooling, and equipping of nationals, missionaries witnessed a tide change. Now, this collection of Indian tribes boasts a higher percentage of Baptists than the state of Mississippi. Now, when he interviewed the guy, he says, I don't miss the old traditions much. They weren't good traditions, said one former headhunter converted to Christ. We have kept the good things in our traditions and have let the bad things go. It's a better culture. A Judeo-Christian culture is a better culture than another culture like this. When you get sick, you go to the doctor. If all cultures are equal, why not get the witch doctor over there from the Nagaland to come over and do some witch, you know, incantations over you to get rid of the spirit demons or something that's harassing you? You don't usually do that. You go down here to the hospital to get an MRI or something, and you work with that. We bring our medicine over there to those cultures to do that. You're making a statement when you do that by way of culture. It doesn't mean Americans are better than anybody else. We're all lepers. It's not the people that are better. If a nation believes in God, that nation is blessed. We're told that. Now, why am I saying this? Because, see, this is the world. And if you don't understand the world that's out there, you're going to be conformed to its thinking. And you're going to start thinking like it, whether you're thinking in terms of cultures. Well, yeah, I guess all cultures are the same. They're not. Cultures are premised and founded on principles. You know the culture is? It's just the externalizing of the internal God that they all serve. And secularism over here is where this culture's going. It's replacing the Judeo-Christian premise with worshiping man. It's going to fall the same way. Think about it in the Old Testament. When God takes Israel out of Egypt, what does he do? He brings them over into the land and he says, look, you're going to go in here and you're going to subdue that culture. I'm going to replace this culture with that culture. Now, does that mean Jews were better lepers than those guys over there, the Canaanites? Even God tells them, says, don't think. You're better by way of a people. You're not. You're no different than they are. What makes you different than them is me. In my laws, in my principles. Because if you do what they do, you practice what they practice, I'm going to treat you the same way I treated them. And it's no different for anybody else. Doesn't matter your skin color. Doesn't matter how fat your wallet is. You don't get to call the shots on your gender. How do I know that? Well, the Bible tells us that. Jesus tells us that. Jesus defines marriage. He tells us these things. Now, I'm either going to go with his dictionary or I'm going to go with the culture's dictionary and I'm going to be conformed to the world. So you have to draw a line in the sand. You have to sing that song, who is on the Lord's side? Who will serve the king? And serving him isn't just some sort of, well, No, you have to understand, you got to fight the tide of how they're going to define sin. They don't have a definition for sin like we talked about last night. Oh, you just have a disease. You just have a sickness. Didn't you know that? No one ever told you that? You need to go get treated for that disease. In your mind, that's all you think. You never think about God. But if we call it idolatry, we enter God into the picture. And now you got to get right with God. We enter demons into the picture, lying to you. Now you got to get serious about warfare. The world's not going to tell you that. That's not part of their lexicon. And when your dictionary confronts theirs, they're going to call you out based on their dictionary. Oh, you're just a homophobe. Well, I'm expecting them to call me that. You're just working off their dictionary. That's what they do. That's what everybody does. They work off their dictionary. So what we need, the need of the hour, is boldness and courage to stand firm for what God has called us to do and to be. So when someone says, hey, but what about that person? If they're a Christian, that's my brother in Christ. There's no other answer. Doesn't matter the skin color, doesn't matter the income stream, doesn't matter all these other things. It's my brother in Christ, and he'll be treated as such, and I will lay down my life for him. And I'll do everything I can to see that his Christian walk succeeds, because my life is not my own. But in the world, you think about it, in the world, there's never forgiveness. There's always going to be being offended and grieved. And there's never redemption. And that's what you find in our culture, in the battle of the identity groups. So in closing, who are you? If you're going to say, I'm a Christian, and by the mercies of God is my motivation, I'm presenting my body as a living holy sacrifice, and the guy next to you is doing the same thing, we don't see ethnicity. And look, that's not just talk. We don't see ethnicity. While I know that's a female and I'm a male, that's not the basis of our fellowship. And it won't be the basis of our compassion. If someone's able or disabled or aged or young or whatever else those distinctions might be, that the world acts like they wear a halo and they want to feel like they're Robin Hood and trying to rob from the rich to give to the poor, it will not stand on judgment day. And you know that. And they need to hear that. You got the wrong distinctions, buddy. That ain't it. It's saved and lost. Heaven and hell. It's not black and white. Get off of it. It's not rich and poor. Stop it. And that's, of course, that's all the political heads are going to be telling you from here to doomsday. It's the things you want to hear along those grievance lines. The real fear of God is that you've grieved Him. And we've got to get right with Him. And so we do all things, like Paul says, for the sake of the elect. And the sake of the elect will be found in every strata from A to Z. From all over. And we go out and we preach that gospel to them because we really know where the real distinction is you've got people that are in the Niagara River under the wrath of God. And you got people who've been delivered who are on the banks preaching to the people who are in the river, saying, you have got to get out of the river. And I will do everything in my power to put a hand in there, to put a branch in there, to get you out of that river in Christ. That's where our real mission is in that alone.
This excerpt was taken from session number 2 of the 2019 Men's Retreat, in which Mark LaCour did a series on Romans chapter 12.